Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Kudzu Vine, the last Sunday in June. And the first thing you folks might notice is that it's me, Tim Shiflett, talking instead of David, who usually talks. But David got lazy on us and went on vacation for a couple of weeks. But hey, Catherine's with us.
Hello, everyone.
Good evening, Catherine, and also with us, an old friend from Floyd County who's appeared with us a couple of times and was on the very first Kudzu Vine show, and that would be the Floyd County Democratic Chair, Mr. Scott Aikman. Good evening, Scott.
Good evening, Tim, Catherine, and everybody else.
Okay, now the first little bit of housekeeping we got tonight before our first guest joins us, I would like to make this announcement. We are pleased to announce tonight that the new Heading Left channel, which features progressive and democratic podcasts in cooperation with Blog Talk Radio, has added the Kudzu Vine to its schedule. Along with our live broadcast, which they will broadcast, we will be replayed three times during the week. That will be on Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m., on Friday from 9:30 to 10:30 p.m., and on Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. We are delighted to be part of this new progressive channel. And if you want to read about this channel and check it out, you can go to headingleft.com. And in the meantime, of course, our regular listeners can continue to find us right where we always are here on Blog Talk Radio. Our thanks go out to Adam Lambert for including the Kudzu Vine on Heading Left. And I think, Catherine, you'll be posting something about that.
Yeah, I'll post something on Blog for Democracy tonight with links and stuff.
Excellent. Now, momentarily, we are expecting our first guest, Ms. Grace Sasser, the Democratic Chair from the great state of Tennessee. He should be calling in just a moment. And in the meantime, we'll go ahead and talk about some of the political news of the week and about what's going on in the state and in national politics. Now, the first item, I guess the biggest thing that happened in politics this week was the, quote, unity event. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton appeared together in Unity, New Hampshire, and that's terrific. It got a lot of coverage. Senator Clinton made a great talk there, by the way, for those of you that didn't see it. But the big thing is, and I want to turn to you and ask you about this, Catherine. Everybody is asking, where is Bill Clinton? He seems to have disappeared. What do you think's up with him?
Well, maybe he's running his foundation. I mean, he is a former president. I'm sure he's got lots of people, you know, bidding for his time, and it's possible that he needed to take a break and do some of those, take care of some of those other responsibilities, and maybe they wanted Senator Obama and Senator Clinton to really show their unity together as candidates, and then I suspect we'll see Bill Clinton, probably before the convention, but certainly after the convention, during the convention. I don't think he's gone. I think he's just, you know, maybe laying low a little bit so they can all unify together. That's my opinion. But like I said before we went on the air, I've been pretty much out of the loop for about a week. So I haven't been reading all the blogs and reading all the pundits. So someone else might know more about that.
Scott, what do you think President Clinton might be up to? Do you think he's just backing off to give the limelight to his wife and to Senator Obama, or Do you think it's like some of the, I know some people on the right blog groups are saying, uh-huh, see there, he hates Obama, he doesn't want to have anything to do with Obama, he wants Obama to come crawling to him. Do you think there's anything to any of that, or what's up?
Well, what I think that the Democratic Party, whether it be Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or even Bill Clinton himself would like, is to be able to reach up on a shelf and pull down vintage Bill Clinton. I think especially in her campaign this past year, you know, he tried to connect with the people like he did as president. And he's had, you know, a lot of health issues in the last 8 years. And I just don't think Bill Clinton can campaign on a day-to-day basis like he could when he was president. And I think it's took a toll on him. And I think maybe if nothing else, this has given him an opportunity to rest up, you know, pre-convention, convention, and certainly for the general elections, where they can get that vintage Bill Clinton back and him be a tremendous asset. But, you know, he is a former president, and he would detract, I think, to an extent from his wife and Senator Obama if he was to, you know, be involved in every day-to-day activity that, is going on currently seeking, the presidency. And hopefully, this unity show in New Hampshire is going to be contagious within the party, and Bill, when he comes back into the limelight to an extent, will be an asset and not a detractor, which is, you know, obviously what the right wants.
Yeah. I was sitting here thinking, I have a wall here right beside me with a lot of the political people that I've known and people that had visited us up here, and I just happened to glance up, and there was a picture of Michael Thurman there, and when he was up with us a couple of months ago at our JJ dinner, he told me in no uncertain terms that he would really love to see the dream ticket. I know it's been talked to death, but you know, I still think that Obama and Clinton should run together. If they want to unify this party in a big way, well, what better way? And is there a better running mate out there for Obama than Senator Clinton? What do you think, Catherine? Should they do it?
I think they should. I think it would be great. I think that it would be a really great ticket. It would be historical and really hard to beat, especially with McCain fumbling so much right now. I think it would satisfy the hardcore Clinton supporters who are disappointed in the outcome now. And I think it would be a great ticket. I'd be proud, really proud to support it, and really proud when we won. I think it would be fabulous.
Okay, and with that, I believe our first guest is with us, Mr. Sasser.
Yes, sir. How are you doing today?
Oh, very well. We are happy tonight, folks, to have with us Mr. Gray Sasser, the Democratic chair in the great state of Tennessee. Welcome, sir. My name is Tim Shiflett, and what I'd like to do, and what we like to do on the Kudzu Vine, I'd like to ask you to start out by giving us a little background, a little biography information on yourself and about your life in politics to this point.
Well, sure, I'd be glad to do that, and I'm glad to be on with all y'all tonight. I've been in around politics almost my whole life. I kind of grew up in it, you could say. My dad was a U.S. senator for about 18 years, and my first memories of campaigning were handing out push cards for him when I was about 6 years old. Since then, and I've gone on to law school, got a law degree, and was legal counsel for the Tennessee Democratic Party for several years, and decided to take a break from my law practice and going to do this job full time. My term ends in January, but I'm going to take it through hopefully a big election for us up here in Tennessee for the Democrats.
Okay, well, thanks for that background. And by the way, I was a great admirer of the work of your father as media
work. You're kind to say that. Very kind.
Right now, let's just jump right into some 2008 Tennessee politics. And I'd like to begin by asking you to tell our listeners about your U.S. Senate race there this year, who's in it, and how it's looking right now.
Well, Lamar Alexander is a Republican incumbent. And Senator Alexander has been around politics just about his whole life. He ran for office for the first time, I think back in 1978, if I'm not mistaken, he's a former governor, former Secretary of Education, and now a member of the U.S. Senate. Senator Alexander likes to portray himself as a moderate and different kind of Republican. And, you know, shoot, he's a very nice fellow, but when push comes to shove, he stands with George Bush about 94-95% of the time. So we think we've got a real chance here. We've got two top-flight Democratic candidates running in a primary. We've got a gentleman by the name of Bob Tuke, who is a former chairman of the Tennessee Democratic Party, a Marine Corps officer who served in Vietnam, and a very prominent adoption attorney here in town, and just a great fellow, along with a guy by the name of Mike Padgett, who's a county clerk from Knoxville. And Mike has been won as a Democrat up there year after year after year. And if you know anything about Tennessee political geography, East Tennessee is a tough part of the state for a Democrat to get elected.
Oh, yeah.
Mike proves time and time again that he can win. So both these gentlemen are squaring off and running a very respectful race. And after August 7th, we'll know who the nominee is and be ready to go forward.
Now, for our listeners that don't know, explain the political geography of Tennessee, because as I recall, it's divided into three very distinct parts. Is that right?
Yeah, if you've ever seen the Tennessee flag, you know, we've got that circle in the middle of it with three stars. And so we like to consider, everybody talks about being three grand divisions of the state. And if you've ever had the fortune, or some people say the unfortunate, to start over in Memphis and drive all the way up to Mountain City in the upper east part of the state, it's a beautiful drive, but it'll take you forever. And so the state is so long, but very narrow, that we have what we call three grand divisions, east, middle, and west. East has been traditionally and historically Republican, dating back to the Civil War. When the war began, that eastern part of the state is very hilly, very mountainous, and there are a lot of strong Union sympathizers up there. And then Middle Tennessee and West Tennessee have traditionally been Democratic. But the political geography of Tennessee, that's the traditional story, but it is changing. It's becoming more in line with what you're seeing across the rest of the country, that you've got the urban centers that are increasingly Democratic, some of the rural areas swinging toward the red column, and then the battle is really going to be fought in the suburban counties from here on out, I believe.
Okay, and how would those affect your House races? I know that you have 9 House seats in Tennessee, 5 Democrats and 4 Republicans, if I'm correct. Are there any competitive races among those 9?
Well, we hope, at this stage of the game, it looks like our Democratic Congressman Lincoln Davis, who's in the 4th District, may have a competitive race, but at the end of the day, I doubt very much he will. There's a gentleman running against Mr. Congressman Davis, but this fellow doesn't even live within the district. Lincoln's got one of the largest geographic districts in the entire country, and the Republicans couldn't even find anybody in the district to run against him.
That kind of stuff on Kudzu Vine.
So this fellow lives about 300, 400 yards outside the district, but has said he's going to put a lot of his own money into the race. And so the possibility of spending a lot of money always gives you a cause for concern, but Congressman Davis does a super job traveling thousands and thousands of miles every year covering that district. And I don't think at the end of the day we're going to have a whole lot of shift in our U.S. House delegation. I expect it to be 5-4 after November.
Okay, Mr. Sasser. We also have with us on here tonight Catherine Smith and Scott Aikman, and
okay.
I'm going to turn it over to them for some questions, and after that I'll come back and we'll wind up the interview. Catherine,
great.
Do you have any questions?
Thank you so much for being on with us tonight.
My pleasure.
I just did a little spin around your website before we started this evening, and I was really impressed with how current and, you know, you've got the donkey's mouth like blog going, and I was just wondering how that process works for your party. Do you do that, or do you have staffers that keep that up to date? Because it was really quite current and quite engaging, and it's a nice model for a state party. I was just wondering how that works for you, and if it's a big, if it's cumbersome, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, sure, and if I can give ourselves a little bit of plug here, anybody who's listening, I'd encourage you to stop by at www.tndp.org, and you can find my email address on there, and you can always drop me a note, too. But to answer your question, we do work very hard to keep that current along with our – we have a daily blog that we post 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day on that. We have a great communications director here, and the name of Wade Monday, and that's really one of Wade's primary responsibilities. We found that, you know, the Obama campaign and the Clinton campaign, but the Obama campaign especially has done just such a terrific job of showing what the Internet can do. And what we found with a lot of our candidates, and we keep encouraging them as well, that most voters right now, you know, they'll see the TV commercial, they'll see a bumper sticker, they'll see a yard sign, but the place they want to go for information about a candidate or a political party is now the web. And we try to make it as convenient as possible, try to keep it update and current. Some days we do a better job than others. But
well, you're doing a better job than a lot of places. So,
well,
you know.
It's not a if you want to talk about resources, it's not a freebie. I mean, you've got to we've spent some money to build and design out the site. As I say, we devote substantial staff hours to it. And we found it to be very cost-effective as well, because if you have a good presence on the web, you can drive not only voters but actually donors to the site as well. And it's been a great tool not only for fundraising but then also for messaging. And the final thing I'd like to say is we do send out a weekly email to anybody in Tennessee, and for that matter anybody across the country who wants to keep current on what's going on in Tennessee. And you can sign up for that email again on our website at www.tndp.org.
And I do have one more question.
Sure.
Do you have DNC staffers on your staff as well?
We do, and I need to give a shout out is too overused term these days, but whatever the proper term is, we have to give it out to our great national chairman, Howard Dean.
You won't get any argument here about how much we love Howard Dean.
He's enabled us to have 3 full-time staff members here in the state, which has allowed us to husband our resources to actually put back into the races. What we found is, we were talking a minute ago about East Tennessee, that traditional Republican area, but we have one of the greatest, field coordinators up there in East Tennessee who is, we're able to fund in large part because of Governor Dean's commitment to the 50-state strategy that Senator Obama is sticking with. So deep in the heart of the most Republican parts of Tennessee, we are working the grassroots from the bottom up. We found, it's been great. We've got these counties literally have not voted for a Democrat, forever. But we've got a cadre of great young Democrats in these counties who've been on the phone, who've been knocking on the doors, who've been working throughout this process, because I realize that a vote in the most Republican county, the most Republican city, counts exact same as a vote in Memphis where we get a big Democratic turnout. So if we can cut the margins in East Tennessee, we really think we can be effective all across the state.
Well, thank you for all your hard work. We know how hard it is because we're, I was surprised at some of the similarities between what's going on in Tennessee and what's going on in Georgia. We've got Saxby Chambliss, we have a couple of candidates running against, and you've got Lamar Alexander. So we have a lot of similar challenges, I guess.
I'm gonna
turn it over to Scott now.
Okay.
Hey, I've got a question about the Tennessee General Assembly.
Yeah.
I'm so envious of what you guys have going on there as a Georgia resident. We have a do-nothing General Assembly that's controlled by the Republicans. And unfortunately, we don't get anything unless we live in the home county of the governor.
Right.
But you guys, it appears, have a nice majority there in the House, and the state Senate looks to be evenly split with an independent, and I was curious, do you look to gain maybe outright control of the Senate in this election?
That's our number one focus. As chairman of the Tennessee Democratic Party, I believe, my job's to help the federal candidates, but it's incumbent upon those federal candidates to do a lot of work for themselves. And so my job has been to work to not only recruit candidates for the state Senate and the state House, but to build up the war chest so that we can push money into those races. It really all starts at the top. We have a terrific Democratic governor in Phil Bredesen. This fellow was able to win all 95 of our counties. So every county in the state last time voted for a Democrat. So the notion that a Democrat can't win in Tennessee, can't win anywhere, is simply a fallacy, and he's proved it. And he's brought a real common sense leadership approach to this process. We had a little bit of a rough patch with falling revenues like we did, like everyone did all across the country. And we had budgeted for those revenues. We were able to, you know, cut the budget again, you know, to trim some of the excess to make sure that we can go forward. And you know, with the leadership of Governor Bredesen, our Speaker of the House, Jimmy Nafee, and the Democratic leader in the State Senate, Jim Kyle, and the head of the Democratic caucus in the State Senate, Joe Haines, we have a great bunch of Democrats. We've all been working closely together to make sure we get the message out that we need to increase that majority in the House and expand our and get the majority back in the State Senate. And we really think we can. There's about three or four contested, I think we've got about four really targeted State Senate races right now. We might expand that out in about six to seven really targeted State House races. And if we can get some momentum going at the top of the ticket, which we're starting to feel, there's no reason we can't pick up seats in both chambers this go around.
That's awesome news. As a Democrat, I wish that we could bring what you have there and bottle it up and just disperse it around the state of Georgia.
Amen.
I'm talking a little down the road here, but you have another U.S. senator that's a Republican who's going to be up for election in a couple of years. Is there any inclination at this point that the current governor might enter that race and try to displace him?
You know, you're going to have to get Phil Bredesen on your show, and I would encourage you to call and ask him that question. He's term limited out after this year, and whatever he decides to do, I do hope he brings the expertise he has not only in budgeting but in healthcare matters and his passion for the environment. I hope he brings it and uses it and continues his career in public service. I'm not sure what his plans hold, but, you know, Bob Corker won by about 3 points last time and beat a good friend of mine by the name of Harold Ford Jr. in a race that a lot of people across the country watched. And I think Harold proved that we can be very competitive in this state. It's interesting to note that Senator Corker is a former mayor of Chattanooga, which is right down there on the border, and he lost his home city to Harold Ford Jr., so the folks who knew him best decided they wanted to go a different route. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out. He's been in there for 2 years and stood closely with George Bush and the other Republicans, but we're about 4 years down the road on that, and my focus is really on November more so than what's going to happen 4 years from now.
I got you. I'm going to turn it over to Tim.
All right.
Oh, okay, Mr. Sasser, before we let you go, I have one more question.
Surely.
Now, let's say that some of our listeners in Tennessee tonight have heard what you had to say, and they like what they hear, and they'd like to get involved either in the Democratic Party or in the fall campaign. What are some things they can do, and how can they contact the Tennessee Democratic Party?
Well, the easiest way to get to us is, again, through the website, and that's www.tndp.org. You can find my email right on there, and that's gsasser@tndp.org, and believe it or not, I read all the emails. So send them up here if you want to get in contact with us directly. We also have links to all of our candidates all across the state, and you can very quickly on our website find any elected official in the state or in your county or in your district, and we can even help figure out on the website. You can figure out what district you're in if for some reason you don't know. One thing I'd like to do is encourage people to get involved, because I always tell people that if you show up the first day at the campaign, you're going to be answering the phone. If you show up the second day, you're going to be in charge of the people answering the phone. And if you show up about 5 or 6 days straight, you might be stuck with my job as chairman. So political campaigns are great, because if you bring the time and commitment to it, you got to be a little patient with it, though. I mean, you can't come in and think you're going to be writing the white paper on, you know, Sino-U.S. relations your first day on the job. But if you keep showing up day after day after day, you're going to get responsibility, all the responsibility you can handle pretty darn quickly.
And meet a lot of great people.
I meet a lot of great people.
Become part of a really great family.
Yeah, I mean,
one
of my favorite examples of that, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but back on the Ford campaign, this fellow showed up. He actually landed, and he was coming in from Germany. He was a U.S. citizen, and every year he decided to come back and pick a race and work on. So this guy showed up. Nobody knew who he was or what he was. And he was sitting there, you know, making phone calls, dialing like everybody else to identify voters, encouraging him to go out to vote. Literally a week later, the guy had organized the entire phone bank for the entire campaign, was doing about 30,000 calls a day. And he just quickly, you know, he was a volunteer, he had the expertise, and he knew what he was doing. So, you know, again, show up and show us what you got. And I don't care if you're in Tennessee or Georgia or somewhere else, you can quickly take a leadership role and really change the direction of the country.
Amen. Well, we'd certainly like to thank you for spending a few minutes with us. And we hope that as we move toward the general election, that maybe you can come back and share some more about Tennessee politics with us.
Well, I'd love to. And, you know, actually, I'm going to be heading through Georgia on Monday with my wife. We're going down to the beaches right outside Savannah for a week. So we'll be in your lovely state next week. So we look forward to seeing y'all.
Well, all right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so
and
much.
Good night.
Good night. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, we're going right to two more callers. Who do we have on with us?
Well, my name's Bob Herndon. I'm in DeKalb County.
Hello, Mr. Herndon. How are you? And who else do we have with us? Hello?
Oh, this is, I'd like to go by my screen name, but your chat room isn't working. I didn't know if you were aware of that.
Oh, no.
It's just a grunt, and I'm from Cobb County, Georgia.
Yes, sir. And what would y'all like to talk to us about tonight?
Actually, I had a question for Mr. Sasser up there in Tennessee, and that was about the Fred Thompson effect in Tennessee. Now that Fred is getting more out front and more active over there on the McCain campaign, are they worried that Fred Thompson will be able to sweep some of the other Republicans into office riding on his coattails?
Unfortunately, Mr. Sasser has already
I know.
Left
and I had a couple questions for him too.
I'm very sorry, gentlemen.
Well, I can tell you that Fred Thompson didn't seem to have much wasn't able to rally much support when he was running for president, so I imagine they're not too concerned about him now.
That's true, yeah. Personally, I think that Lamar Alexander would have a much bigger effect on any other races in Tennessee, including the presidential race, than any other. Wouldn't you, Scott?
Oh, I would agree. I mean, Lamar Alexander is a former presidential candidate, and you know, his numbers were significantly higher than Fred Thompson's. I mean, basically had to get a microscope out to see where Fred Thompson was polling as presidential candidate. And, you know, if he has any effect in Tennessee, I would think that it would be in the mountainous eastern part of the state. And yeah. I don't think he would be significant. You know, his time, I think, has come and gone. I think he's defined himself as a candidate.
And I don't think
there's a lot of appeal.
And even in the mountains of East Tennessee, I think Lamar Alexander would have a lot more effect because he happens to be, his hometown is in Maryville, which is 18 miles from Knoxville, right in the middle of the Great Smoky Mountains. So I really think Lamar Alexander, to answer y'all's question, would be the guy to watch. If he runs up a significant vote in his race, he can actually act like the top of the ticket instead of McCain.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry you both missed him, gentlemen.
Well, I'm looking at his. My question was how the Tennessee selected their delegates, and I'm on their website, and it looks like they just met on March 8th and had a state national or March 8th national delegation meeting to select standing committee members and delegation chair.
Yeah, I think they actually have a statewide convention after, of course, the primary. Allocated
it. It looks like it was selected by state committee members.
You know, a good idea for both of you. You heard him mention the website up there for the Democratic Party of Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
And a good thing to do would be he's got his personal email on there, and he just told us right before he went off, as a matter of fact, that he actually reads all of the emails, and he could answer your questions for you personally.
I'm sure he'd be
what
happy to do so.
Address again?
But
hold on. Go ahead.
We. Yeah, I was just going to say, gentlemen, we appreciate you both calling into the Kudzu Vine, and we hope you call again.
Yeah, could you give the website address again?
It's tndp.org.
Well, I'll just stay on the line and listen to you all. That's the way I hear the show.
Okay,
that
all right?
That'll be great. Thanks a lot. Okay, moving right along, folks, our next guest is due to call in about 10 minutes, and so we're going to go back and talk about some other stuff that's going on in the world of politics. Catherine, I don't know if you had a chance or Scott to see the email that David sent out about the poll in Congressman Brown's race. Did either one of y'all see that?
I did not. I saw it, but I didn't have a chance to look at it.
And nor have I.
What does it look like?
Well, it was commissioned by the Brown campaign by the Terrence Group, a pretty reputable polling company, and they've got Representative Brown with 80% and Barry Fleming with 15%. And I've got to be honest, that just can't be right.
Well, you know what they say about polls that the campaigns pay for. They give you what they always give them what they want.
Boy, they gave them what they wanted in a big way. Scott, you think there's any, Representative Fleming is pretty well known, and it's thought that the state Republican Party put him up to run because they are still feeling the sting of what happened to their anointed candidate over there last year. Do you think there's any way this poll can be right?
No, I would have to go and really, they are a reputable polling company that you talked about, but there has got to be some kind of major, I would think, sampling error that was, somehow brought into the polling technique. I don't know what it could be. That's an astronomical number. If somebody's polling legitimately that high, they need to look further down the road at maybe a larger position within government.
Really? And I believe our second guest is on with us. Let me click here. And who do we have on with us?
This is Ellery Gould with the Jim Martin campaign.
Ah, we are pleased to welcome Mr. Ellery Gould, the campaign manager for Jim Martin. And as before I ask the question, I've already heard, Mr. Gould, that I am pronouncing your last name correctly. So that's
that is right, yes.
So let's get right to the campaign. Mr. Martin entered this race pretty late in the game. Most of the candidates had already been in the race for a year or more. So why did Mr. Martin enter at the time that he did?
Well, he felt that nobody was really standing up to Saxby Chambliss for middle-class Georgia families. He felt that he had the opportunity to run the campaign and solve those problems that that really wasn't being done, and so he got in the race and got in strong and is building the organization. I'm obviously helping to do just that.
Mm-hmm. Now, but obviously entering the race at the time you did, shall we say, comes with its own unique set of challenges. And given the short time frame, how are your organization and fundraising efforts doing compared to the other campaigns who've been at it a little bit longer?
Well, I can't speak for the other campaigns, but what I can tell you is that because Jim was able to run such a strong race in 2006 in what was a very tough Democratic year, and he outperformed the top of the ticket, outperformed Taylor by, over 75,000 votes. There's a strong groundwork there. There's a strong network of folks who worked their heart outs for Jim in 2006 and are already there and in place and ready to do it again. And so there are literally thousands of Georgians now who have just in these few short months been able to get engaged with this campaign and really sort of take up where they left off. And it's been really gratifying for Jim to see, and I think is really really helps us make up some of that gap, because you're right, Jim did get in late.
Well, in comparing the candidates, what, in your opinion, would make Jim Martin the best candidate to take on Saxby Chambliss in the fall?
Well, you know, I think it's a lot of things. I think every one of the candidates running in this Democratic primary wants to see change in Washington, and I think the difference is that Jim Martin has been making that change happen for Georgia families for his entire career. You know, starting as a legal aid lawyer, and then in the legislature, you know, he's been fighting those fights, and it's not easy, but he's won. He's stood up to insurance companies when they didn't want to cover breast cancer coverage for women. He's stood up to lenders to make them treat homeowners fairly in terms of foreclosures. I mean, Jim was on the forefront of that issue before the predatory lending bubble burst, and so I think it's that kind of accomplishment and that kind of a commitment that really sets Jim apart. Plus, as I said, you know, not for nothing, because we are trying to beat Saxby Chambliss here and run a solid campaign. Having run before statewide and having that statewide network in place and a lot of excited people on the ground really is going to make a difference in being able to pull it all together.
Okay, and I don't want to hog up all the question time here, because also with us on the show tonight, we have Scott Aikman, the Floyd County Democratic Party chair, and Catherine Smith, whom you know from the metro area down there. And I'm going to turn it over to them for some more questions, beginning with you, Scott.
All right. If I'm not mistaken, Jim is a veteran of the military and served in Vietnam. Is that correct?
That's right. He was a military intelligence officer in Vietnam.
Is he reaching out to veterans? Because we know Saxby had a bum knee and couldn't go to Vietnam. And, you know,
yes.
I'm just...
Lots of those Republicans with bum knees, huh?
Yeah, it's funny how they come up, huh?
But those knees don't hurt them when it's time to vote to send the boys overseas.
No, they don't seem to, do they?
No.
I think Jim's experience as a veteran is very compelling, and I think not only do veterans identify it with it, but I think voters at large see that early commitment to public service as something that's really worthwhile and something that they want to see in a candidate. So the short answer is yes, we are reaching out to veterans, but telling that part of the Jim Martin story about his service, and you know, if you ask Jim, he's almost shy about it. He says, you know, I wasn't a war hero. Max Cleland, that's a sure enough war hero. But Jim did serve and was proud to serve, and I think it's one of those really compelling parts of who Jim is, and that shows that commitment to service really early in his life.
And I agree. I've met Jim and talked to him about his service, and he is certainly very humble about it. And,
sure.
And that's refreshing when a lot of people who play it up to be more, much more than what it is. And going along those lines, playing things up to be a lot more than what they are, Jim, to me, is very much an advocate for children, and
yeah.
Always has been. And, you know, we seem to find ourselves here in the state of Georgia and across the United States where crime targeting children is continuously on the rise, and I'm just curious if this is something that Jim's going to campaign on, and I don't think we need a promise from him. I think his record speaks for itself, but, you know, where do children play into this campaign?
I think that's a good question. I think people are very concerned right now about not just the safety of their children, but the future of their children as well. I think that's why, you know, when we're talking about these economic issues, these Bush economic policies that affect families, I think most Georgians see it in terms of their kids. About, you know, first of all, as grocery prices go up, is my kid literally going to get the enough food to grow up strong and healthy? And then we're looking at the education system and seeing that you know, we're being our kids are being taught to test instead of being taught to learn and to succeed. And then there are all those threats out there in terms of, you know, meth and violence and that sort of thing and online predators. And I think there's a level of anxiety now that really hasn't been there in the last few years as all these threats sort of come together. And so I think that is sort of part of the message that we touch on. Because you're right, Jim does have an incredible record of standing up for children and really putting them first. That's always, you know, he talks about his experience as commissioner of DHR, Department of Human Resources, and a lot of what they did dealt with child safety and those foster kids in the care of the state. And there are a lot of tough decisions there that you have to make. Jim's philosophy always was what's in the best interest of the child. And that was always DHR's core mission and something that he's absolutely committed to. So, you know, he's going to be talking about that, about his experience at DHR, and children inevitably come into play with that. And as I said, these larger economic issues that face families, part of protecting children and part of it all comes together, I think. And I think you will hear a lot about that.
Thank you very much. Catherine?
Hey, Ellery. I think we met at the DFA training in Atlanta.
Yes.
Is that
right?
Your
name sounds very familiar. Yeah,
okay.
That was a good weekend for me. How? What did you think of it?
I thought it was great. And
when
I saw your name, I was like, I think I know him.
Yeah. No, DFA is such a great, great group of folks, and I've been really honored to be a part of them in terms of going around the country and doing these grassroots trainings because, you know, it's really helpful for me, actually, to talk about what I do because it helps sharpen the saw for me. I get a real charge out of the energy from going to those groups, but I also get to think through all the different steps and really improve how I do things. And
we really appreciated your participation.
Well, good. I hope it was helpful. I'm real happy to bring. I mean, DFA is such a great organization in terms of its commitment to grassroots activism and organizing. And I'm real happy to be able to bring some of that focus to this campaign and to Jim Martin and how we're going to take things here on out. But I'm sorry, you haven't even asked a question yet.
Well, that's fine. I think we have plenty of time. I just wanted to ask, you know, we've been, Cudzie Vine's been reached out to the candidates that are running for this seat as well as, you know, all the other ones in Georgia. And we've been fortunate enough to have, I think, all the other candidates on live. And I was just wondering if we might be able to actually, I mean, we love talking to you, and you're wonderful,
hey.
But we were just wondering.
The answer is yes. We can certainly get Jim on.
Yeah, because I think it would be helpful for the listeners to actually hear from Jim. I'm a big fan of his. I supported him wholeheartedly in 2006. I have to say I've been really distracted with some family matters, so I haven't gotten on board yet. But we're big fans of his, and we would. I think it would be great if we could hear from him directly. Not that, like I said, not that we don't appreciate hearing from you.
Sure.
And I
don't take that personally at all. he's the guy with the name on the ballot, so
yeah.
We can certainly
also
make that happen, and I regret that it hasn't happened yet.
I also wondered if you wanted to comment on the kind of, I mean, I think all of us have been a little bit surprised by some of the polling numbers that have come out over the last, you know, there's been, I think, I don't know, three or four polls that, I think all of us expected, all of those, you know, all of us inside baseball politics people really expected that when Jim stepped into the race that it would be kind of a horse race between Jim and Vernon Jones. And
mm-hmm.
I think many of us were surprised by some of the numbers from some of the other candidates. And I just wondered if you had any, if you've had, I mean, I'm sure you analyzed them, and you might, I just wondered what your thoughts are on those results.
Sure. Right before I got on, I think we were talking about polls and candidate polls, and you know, sometimes you take those with a grain of salt. So you can take ours with a grain of salt, but we did do a poll that showed Jim leading the pack, but with a lot of undecided, which I think is probably about right for right now, because people, you know, it's been a very low-profile race for this nomination. Jim was at 21%, Vernon Jones at 15%, and nobody else broke single digits. And I think, you know, that's probably a pretty accurate representation of where things were when we took the poll before there was any television advertising, before, I mean, there have been probably more stories on this race in the last 2 weeks or so than there have been in the last 2 months. So I think things are really going to start crystallizing for voters, and that 51% undecided that we had in our poll are really going to start paying attention and looking for who speaks best for them. And we're really confident that with Jim's profile and experience and his message, which is that, you know, it's time to roll back these Bush economic policies, and that he has the experience standing up to special interests to do that. I think we're going to get our share and then some of that 51% undecided. And I can't speak for any other candidate polls.
Right. Well, I wouldn't ask you to. Now, somewhat related to that, I think the other kind of surprise that, especially those of us who are big Jim Martin fans, and have been some of the endorsements. And I just wonder. I'd like to, before I ask that question, I want to ask you. You said you were talking about getting the message out. You've actually mentioned that a couple of times, and I'm just wondering: Are you going to be doing a big ground field campaign as well as a media campaign, or are you really going to be focused more on media?
Well, I mean, I think the best way to win is to do both, I don't want to ignore either part of it. As you know, that DFA training and background puts a big emphasis on the ground game, and I don't take that for. I think that is a big part of running a successful campaign. And, you know, we had canvassers out yesterday, and we're going to be out at all these 4th of July parades, and we're doing sort of the broad visibility stuff, but we're also doing the targeted stuff. We got phone banks rolling, looking for those Democratic super voters, those folks who, you know, July primaries are pretty low turnout, so you gotta pick and choose where you put your resources, and we're putting them into finding those folks who are gonna vote. What we found so far is that they're very receptive again to Jim's message and profile, and a lot of them remember him from 2006. It's sort of this latent name recognition, more than name recognition, this sort of latent familiarity with Jim, where, you know, they'd sort of forgotten about him, but when you remind them, they're like, oh yeah, that guy, the guy who was talking about predatory lending in 2006.
And then, what do you think about these endorsements? I think a lot of us were really kind of like flabbergasted.
Yeah, you know, it is amazing, I can't speak for those organizations, but you know, Jim has really been such an advocate for teachers and organized labor in his career. I think this is. To his credit, Rand Knight's been doing this for a while in terms of running, and you know, he has an advantage that he has been working that crowd for a year, and I don't take anything away from him on that. I think it doesn't change who Jim is and who he's going to fight for. He's not, you know, just because he didn't get organized labor's endorsement in this round. First of all, doesn't mean he's not going to get it later. They certainly, I think, still have good relations. When we had those conversations with them, when they told us that they were going elsewhere, they certainly made it clear that this was not a reflection on where they viewed Jim on their issues. So first of all, it doesn't affect the political end game, I don't think. And second of all, it doesn't affect what Jim believes in. Just because he doesn't get their endorsement doesn't mean that he's not going to keep fighting for those same issues. So I think a lot of this is sort of a momentary distraction from what we all know is the real goal here, which is to put together the coalition, which, you know, organized labor is part of that, as sort of not just a traditional Democratic constituency, but a group that cares deeply about some of these issues that we're going to be talking most about. But then there are other parts of the coalition. I mean, we all know that Georgia is a tough state. You know, I think this is the year where it's less tough. But you got to run a hard campaign. So you have teachers and organized labor, and you have farmers, and you got an urban-rural coalition, and you got to put it all together with the money and the organization and the infrastructure to make it work. And I think that's what we're going to do. And you know, we'll get some of those pieces earlier than others, and we'll get some of those pieces later than others. But I'm pretty confident that it's still there on the table for us.
Well, I think it's great. I'm glad that Jim's got such a good person working with him. I'm sure you've got a good team going, and more power to you.
I'm real proud of this campaign and this staff. I mean, for for something that came together, just in the last few months, we've really been able to pull this together in a way that is sort of unshakable. To my mind, because there have been those sort of disappointments along the way, and for a new campaign and a new staff, you would think that things might fall apart. And I can tell you, looking at things internally, everybody is just determined to get this done and to move forward, and it hadn't slowed us down, and I'm real proud of that.
Great. I'm going to give it back to Tim.
Okay. Now, before we conclude this interview, Mr. Gu, I'd like to ask one more thing. If someone is listening tonight that likes what they heard here and they want to help Jim Martin get elected, what can they do and who can they contact to do it?
That is the perfect question. www.martinforsenate.com is gonna tell you more information. But in terms of getting involved, we have canvassing going on. We're expanding outside of Metro Atlanta, which is what you have to do. We're going to have canvasses go on outstate in places where we think we can be effective. So you can contact us about that. And we're going to have phone banking. And there's an amazing thing, and you really have to credit the Democratic Party of Georgia for this. They have software now that we have access to, and our campaign has access to allow you to do phone banking from your own home. If you have an internet connection, you log in, and it gives you a script and a number to call, and you can support Jim Martin that way, and be call voters from your own phone and tell them about Jim. And I think that's one of these great innovations in technology and campaigning, that you can have that kind of direct contact and skip out some of this some of the stuff that used to be hard, where you if somebody is not near a campaign headquarters and has to drive all the way in, they might not. But this makes it easy for folks to get involved and really just spreading the word, because it is more than just TV ads to pull this off. It's really about folks telling people they know to vote and why they are supporting somebody like Jim, who has the experience and really has never wavered from this fight to stand up for hardworking Georgians. And that's what it's all about, and we're confident that this thing is, and we're seeing it spread like wildfire. So start with the website. You can call our office. Our contact info is on there. If you're looking specifically to volunteer either with canvassing or phone banking, Ania is the woman you want to talk to here. She's fantastic. And we'll get you involved and hooked up and take it to all the way to November.
Okay, well, we certainly thank you for being with us on the Kudzu Vine tonight. Good luck to you on July 15th. And if you get the nomination, I'm going to make you promise right now that both you and Jim Martin are going to appear on the Kudzu Vine at a later date together. What do you think of that?
I don't think you need me, but I'll do it, and I can certainly promise that we'll get Jim on, because it's a good crowd, and you all do have a great program that this is what it's all about. We're circumventing the mainstream media. We're certainly circumventing those expensive TV ads that I have to pay for, and getting right to people who want to be involved. And I'm sure your audience appreciates it as much as I do.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank
and good
you.
Night.
Thank you. Bye bye, y'all.
Okay. Looks like we've got about 7 minutes left in the program. I'm going to go ahead and do the outrage of the week. Then we'll come back and talk for a couple of minutes and wrap this thing up. I want to do something just a bit differently with this segment this week. I'd like to talk about something that happened locally, which I normally don't do, but it got my blood to boiling, so I'm going to talk about it anyway.
in the last couple of weeks, there have been two public political forums in my county featuring candidates from both parties. And I really enjoy this type of event. You can see everyone in these local races in one room and hear what they have to offer. But I was just shocked to hear how these Republicans, the local ones, reacted to questions about the economy. Personally, I don't know anyone who doesn't think that the economy is just in the tank. But believe it or not, I actually heard some Republicans talk about how much better the economy is under George Bush than it was under Bill Clinton. And even those Republicans who did admit that Georgia's economy is bad managed to blame it on anything except where the blame belongs. I even heard one of them lay the blame for high gasoline prices squarely on Democrats. Well, look, I hate to burst their bubble, but the last time I checked, there was a Republican in the White House, and the last time I checked, the Republicans were in control of the Georgia government. So this is their economy. This is George Bush's economy, and George Bush's economy is just a train wreck. One of these forums that I mentioned was simulcast up here on local radio and local television. So I'd like to ask these Republicans one thing. How could you stand there with a straight face and say these things to the voting public that was listening to you? Let me remind you of some things. The housing market didn't collapse under Bill Clinton. Unemployment never increased in those years. The price of gasoline was $1.46 when Bush took office. We were not spending $12 billion a month in a useless war in Iraq, and for you Georgia Republicans, I might add that no Democratic governor ever cut $1.5 billion from the education system here. So voters, let me ask you something. What exactly have these Republicans done for you? I'll tell you what, on July the 15th, Georgia voters will be going to the polls, and I want to ask all of you listening to me tonight to send a message. Take a Democratic ballot. Tell your friends, relatives, and neighbors to take one as well, and then in November, vote Democratic again. It's time for a change. It's time to turn this country around, and I want Georgia to do its part and elect Democrats in every last race. And with that, I see that the old clock is telling us that the evening is just about over. As usual, lovely Catherine, I thank you for being with us here tonight.
I'm happy to be here. I'm looking forward to next week, too, when we have the Public Service Commission candidate.
Right. Next week on the Kudzu Vine, we are scheduled to have another of our forums, this time featuring two candidates for the Public Service Commission. And Professor Aikman, we thank you for subbing tonight and taking time out of what I know is a frightfully busy schedule for you, sir. You are a scholar and a gentleman.
Thank you, Tim. And if I can just add for a few seconds, kind of touch on what you were saying. About 3 weeks ago, Katie Dempsey, Republican House member from the Georgia General Assembly, had a forum where she was going to talk to her voters. And she brought the majority leader with her, Representative Skeen, and it was nothing more than smoke and mirrors. The reason that the governor, lieutenant governor, and Speaker Richardson didn't get anything done, according to Representative Skeen, was because of Roy Barnes and the late Tom Murphy.
Get my ballot
and let's go vote on the 15th.
Yeah, the stuff, it does fly at campaign time, doesn't it, folks? Well, it's been another great show, and Scott, I want you to remind me next week, we want to touch on that House race down there that you've got in Floyd County, because I think it's one of the very best races in this state this year.
All right.
So don't let me forget. And thank you, guys, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.